This edition of Today in Tech is brought to you by listeners like you. Thanks for all your generous contributions. Hey there, how are you today? From Cincinnati, Ohio, I'm Dylan Combs, and it's Today in Tech episode 43. I'm assuming it's 43. Podomatic lost some of my shows. Speaking of shows, I've got a few announcements before we get into this one. If you've been subscribed to this feed for any amount of time, you're probably surprised to be getting this update. The shows are back, or at least this one is anyway. We have a new official schedule for the recording of this show. You can tune in live every Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to live.combs.tv to watch us do this show live. It's not all that interesting, but we appreciate you guys coming out. If you want to download these episodes, they'll be released by 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Saturday as well. And the problem with this show before was mainly just that I'd never had a set panel of hosts. It was always just me and whoever else I wanted to get on, if I could get people on short notice usually. So I decided to change all that and get a set panel of hosts for every week. So I want to introduce them one at a time, first starting with Kat Armstrong. Welcome, Kat.
Hey, thanks, Dylan. Hi, everybody.
So for those who may not know who you are and what you do and all that fun stuff, tell us about yourself.
They don't want to hear about me. They want to hear about you. You're the star of the show.
Oh, it's okay. I'll only do this once. I won't make you do it every week.
Oh, okay. Why are you going to put me on the spot like that? You should have warned me.
Yeah, I should have. Bradley, warning,
yeah,
you're next.
No fair. Let's see. I live in Indianapolis. I am a mom, and I'm a nana, and those are the most important things in life. Beyond that, I am a geek girl. I am a writer, a blogger. Community manager for Chris Perlow. I do have a pretty cool project of my own coming up, but I'm not going public with it for a few more days. So perhaps next week we can talk about that. Pretty big news, so I'm excited about it. It's going to take up a lot more of my time, but it's going to be completely worth it.
I agree. I want to tell people about it so bad.
Not yet.
Oh, well. Next week, maybe.
We could talk about it next week.
Also, our other host on the line with us that's going to be here every week is Bradley Horton, otherwise known in IRC to our IRC regulars as Alistair Moody. Welcome, Bradley.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. So tell us about you. What do you do? Who the hell are you?
Well, I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm 17 years old. I've been on IRC for about 3 years now. I'm widely known by Alistair Moody as my nick, as you mentioned. I'm an avid follower of the security industry. I do another podcast like this. I'm helping Kat with a few of Chris's websites and such, and I've just, you know, been around. Well, nothing too special
stuff
about me, really, but
nice.
Well, we're glad to have both of you on every week. Like I said, now I have a set panel of awesome hosts, so this show shall be full of win every Saturday.
Epic win.
Now we're keeping the format of this show the same. We're still going to do the what I call quote twit style show with tech news one story at a time. I didn't want to change that, and obviously I'm sure we'll end up bullshitting and, you know, getting off the track a little bit. So without further ado, I believe Kat has our first story.
Before we get into the stories, maybe you should let everybody know, about the name change.
Ask
for more suggestions. Yes,
you're right. We're actually still running that contest. I, as many of you know, I hate the name of this show. I've always hated the name Today in Tech, but I used it because I couldn't come up with anything better, and neither could anybody else that I asked. So thanks to generous contributions from Brad over at techwebcast.info, definitely go check him out. We are doing a giveaway, so if you have suggestions for a new name for this show, send them to dylan@combs.tv. Submit as many as you want, as often as you want. And if I choose your name to be the next name of this show, you will win $40 in PayPal or $40 in iTunes cards or Amazon or I'll give you $40. So email me your suggestions for the new names.
And just to clear up any future confusion, Brad is not me. He is actually Brad in the chat room. I'm Alistair Moody in the chat room that goes by Bradley on the podcast.
Yep. Yes. I have this thing. I like to be somewhat professional and not use chat names on the show. I'm
fine with that. I'm rather professional myself. I try to keep it that way anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, what was that, cat?
Cough, cough.
There's no coughing on the podcast. That causes post-production. No, I'm kidding. I'm after
the cough.
All right. Let's get into the news. Kat, what's going
on? We are going to jump right into things. You know, what would a social news be if we didn't discuss Facebook in some way, shape, or form? I mean, seriously, we have to talk about Facebook, right?
Of course.
Of course.
Unfortunately.
Oh, here we go. Al is so ready. So the other day, I got up way too early, woke up with a nasty migraine, the kind that makes you, like, hug the toilet bowl. It was horrible. And I stayed up because I needed to watch the live stream of the Facebook announcements. And I am so insanely glad that I did, because they have some really cool stuff coming up. One of the things that they launched is called Facebook Deals. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, what's the big deal? Who really cares? We can get coupons anywhere. Groupon does this. But actually, Facebook does it a little bit better, and I love the way that they're approaching it. There's four different levels of deals. There's individual deals, which are going to reward a customer if they check in once. There's loyalty deals, which give you different higher level rewards if you check in more than once, of course. The more you check in to, like, Starbucks or to Kohl's or just, I don't know where all they've made partnerships yet. But the more you check in, the more discounts, the more coupons that you're going to have available. There's friend deals, which are going to reward you every time you bring in more friends. And then charity ones, which allow businesses to donate to charities for every single check-in that they attract. That is hot.
There's
also charities that you can check into directly. In connection with Facebook Places, the whole thing. But the biggest news of all, which shocked the living crap out of me and pretty much everybody else on this planet, Facebook is not taking a single cut of this.
Really?
Absolutely. They are not taking a single percentage, as am I. Another thing is, it's not only tied to check-ins. You don't only have to check in order to receive the deals. So if you're sitting at home and you're thinking, oh, I think I got to get this and this and this, and I want to go shopping, but I don't know where, plug in your zip code or you know, your general location, and you're going to see all kinds of crap. And you can pick and choose your stores from there and then go check in.
Actually, it's not...
I like that that side of it as well.
I'm not actually that surprised about them not taking a cut, because if you think about it, this could bring... millions of people who didn't originally get on Facebook as much or never went on there. And absolutely. This will definitely bring business, which means they'll get free advertising just throughout the business, the different businesses. And what better medium to use advertising than businesses? They're the best at it. And, you know, anyone in the local area is going to hear about it. So,
and, you know, unlike Groupon and those, you know, what they're doing is good and everything, but they, of course, take a cut of the profits. That's how they stay in business. By not doing that, Facebook is opening it up, and it's not only the Starbucks and the large chains that can participate. The mom and pop store down the street can get involved and offer deals and not lose their ass money-wise.
Exactly.
I love that.
I mean, Facebook doesn't need to.
Doing it right.
Yeah, Facebook doesn't need to make a cut of this. That's why they're not.
Right.
And I think maybe I'm wrong. Tell me if you think I am. But I think the only reason they're doing this is to bring more people into places, because. I know it's been a while since Places has launched, and I mean, every once in a while, maybe once or twice a week, I'll see somebody in my friend stream that's using Places, but I expect to see quite a few more now. I think, you know, there's always an underlying reason for this, you know, this kind of stuff, and I think this is just purely to drive traffic to Places.
It is, and I absolutely agree.
It's good.
They launched on launch day. They launched with 22 premium partners. That's, you're talking big names. More than 20,000 small businesses from day one, launch day, had access to the new deal. There's a deal creation tool. So basically, you know, you can take your business, you can head to the deals place or page on Facebook and just, it creates it for you. It's so intuitive and user-friendly. It's just,
now, it's what hot. Is this going to do to services like Foursquare and Gowalla, where people are checking in now, and some places are even offering discounts on those?
You know, I
killer.
I write tech news. Yeah, exactly, Bradley. I write tech news all day, every day. You guys know this. And I laugh and shake my head every time I see, this is an iPhone killer. This is a Facebook killer. We're going to kill this and we're going to kill that. And you're like, just, I hate that term, but it applies here. This could seriously hurt Foursquare, well, and Gowalla, and because Facebook, it is so different, people are going to like this.
Facebook is so big, right, and it can take these things down just like Apple can when they launch a new product and it, you know, removes all the other crap. Facebook, I mean, they're not the most popular in the privacy word of things, obviously.
But they try. But I do give them credit for that.
This 500 million active users per day, that's ridiculous. That is a good chunk of the planet.
Oh, it's 600 million now.
Yeah, already?
600 million, yeah. Let me address something Nick just said in chat. He said, he's kind of frustrated about this. And he said, Facebook brings out a new feature to distract you even more from actually talking to your friends. And I actually disagree with you, Nick. Facebook is so much more than just chatting with your friends.
Exactly.
You know, Mark Zuckerberg has said from day one, long before it was even Facebook, that this was a social community. It wasn't only about talking to people. He literally wants to open up the world of communication. And if that means check-ins or a story that I'm going to talk about a little bit later in the podcast, another new thing that they're doing, he's changing the game. He's changing the way we live our life, literally. Whether you agree with it or not, that's just the way it is.
And that's my only concern is Facebook is, you know, their exponential growth in the past couple of years is mind-blowing.
It's scary.
And now they're, you know, and now they're coming out and they're potentially going to destroy other services like Foursquare and Gowalla with this places and deals. And it's like, you know, before long, we'll be doing everything inside of Facebook. And then we're locked into this one platform. And
no, disagree, because they're doing the same thing that Apple did with the iPhone. They are raising the bar. They're challenging these other companies to bring their game and to make what they're doing even better.
You know,
and we're going to see increased services and better, more competition, and I think that's a good thing.
Facebook
hasn't
done one.
Can they compete with this?
Facebook hasn't done one thing to make me even remotely want to go and join. So I highly doubt this is going to lock me anywhere because I am the
last person. Well, it's funny because I have Facebook, of course, but I rarely use my own personal account. It was great when my dad had surgery a few months ago and everybody was waiting to hear, you know, he had lung cancer and he had part of his lung removed. And there's all these people waiting to hear, I'm sorry, I'm a little busy worrying about my dad and caring for my dad. I'm not going to sit there and call 500,000 people to tell him he's out of surgery. He woke up. He, you know, I logged onto my iPhone. I went to Facebook and I posted updates. Bing, I was done.
Yeah, you know, I don't use it a whole lot either.
Other than that, I don't use it much.
I'm only on Facebook for one reason. Everybody knows this. I don't like Facebook. I don't like a lot of the things that they do. But, you know, I even did the whole when everyone was talking about the quit Facebook day and Leo Laporte quit Facebook. I did it as well. I closed my Facebook page, but the next day I went back and opened it because it wasn't my privacy and my security I was worried about. It was other people's, for one, and for two, it's not just that my friends are there; it's that my listeners are there. And it's not to right. me. For me, Facebook is not a personal communication tool to talk with people I know necessarily. It's I use it like Twitter.
Mm-hmm. If you are a business, a service, or retain a group of people that know you well or know your business model well, you practically, for the benefit of your business or service, have an obligation to associate yourself with Facebook in some way, shape, or form.
Also, just to throw it out there, facebook.com/TheDylanCombs, 809 fans. Let's get 1,000.
Go for it.
I had to. While we're on the topic of Facebook, I watched that event and nothing really stood out to me as, you know, awesome except really the deals. But one thing that I did notice was Zuckerberg's reaction to being asked about Facebook on the iPad. I mean, they don't want anything to do with that. I mean, we've already got Facebook
on
the iPad.
He totally blew that off. Did you notice that? He didn't even answer it, really.
And I mean, to be honest, we already have it. If you've got an iPad, go download the app called Friendly, and you've got a Facebook client that actually works better than Facebook in the browser. But the point is that it's a mobile platform that they don't want to say is a mobile platform that they refuse to address when they need to.
Yeah.
They need to put out an app for this. I mean, I think people are getting tired of having to go to the website or, you know, download a third-party application. It doesn't make sense to me why they wouldn't do an app.
Very good point.
I mean, and his excuse, I remember hearing him say on stage, it was because of limited resources. Bullshit. That is a crock of shit.
Right. Facebook with limited resources. That's funny.
And an app gives you anyone the advantage to optimize what it needs to do.
Well, oh well. I don't want to give Facebook any more attention than it already has.
Well, we're going to later in the show, but for now we'll stop and we'll let Bradley take over.
Yes.
So we can talk about denial of service.
All right. First of all, I'm going to give you the background on this whole thing because you're going to have to know the background information to get it. There's an internet community basically known as Anonymous. It's been going around for a while. They're part of the Avid posting image board 4chan. And what they do is they go around and they, in a way, protest. In a large way, they protest by taking down websites or making themselves known, getting attention. And what they have been doing in the past is they have been finding, ever since the IRAA and other organizations and governments have been attacking the Pirate Bay, a peer-to-peer service, with a denial-of-service attack, Anonymous has retaliated by attacking their websites and attacking the government websites with the DDoS, which is a distributed denial-of-service attack. It's basically when many computers use their resources to pound packets throughout different ports and of information to a service, and it causes the website to be inaccessible because the servers can't take load, so it can't run. People can't go to it. And basically, this article, it says in the last 2 months, dozens of anti-piracy groups, copyright lawyers, and pro-copyright outfits have been targeted by a group of internet vigilantes under the flag of Operation Payback. The operation began in September with DDoS assaults against the MPAA, RIAA, and anti-piracy company Iaplex Software. It's just been going around, and basically they have decided to take on the United States Copyright Office, which is probably the biggest target they've done.
I wish them good luck.
Well, it says that they chose copyright.gov as a target because it is, and I quote, perpetuating the system that is allowing the exploitative usage of copyright and intellectual property.
Yeah, there's two sides to this specifically.
There is.
You're either a person who... Actually, there's probably three different groups. You're either the person who is with Hollywood, you believe you should do anything and everything to protect everything, and you believe everyone is a criminal, or you're on the totally opposite side of the spectrum. You want free. You're sick of paying for stuff. You want to be free, and you're cheap. And so you torrent everything, and you
it's
couldn't
not,
give
it's not even that. It's that copy or protection does nothing. Literally, copy protection does nothing. People, the only reason people are illegally downloading this shit anyway is because it's easier. Honestly, what it is.
When I wrote this article on Chris's blog the other day when it came out, I said something. I was looked for more information than just the link that we have here in our show notes, of course. And they describe themselves very loosely, Anonymous does, as it says, Anonymous sees itself as the defenders of the internet. They are a rather loose coalition of individuals who see the crackdowns against file sharing done in the name of copyright protection as being contrary to the very freedom of the internet. Period. End of quote. That's what they believe in. They think that it should be, you know, the freedom of the internet, they feel translates to we should be able to get whatever the hell we want without paying for it.
It's not that.
That's their belief.
It's two things.
The free exchange of internet information, I guess. I don't know.
I know, I can tell you for a fact what started all this. And for one, it was the fact that, think about it like this. If I go on iTunes and I pay 99 cents and I download a song legally, Can I do anything I want with it? Can I put it on any device I want and listen to it anywhere I want? No,
I
can't.
They recently took out the copy protection in iTunes.
I know, but by default, by the way it's done, without hacking around at it, I can't. However, if I go and not, I'm not saying I do, but I'm just saying, however, if I was to go and illegally download the same song, which is just as easy as downloading it in iTunes for 99 cents, can I do whatever I want with it? Yes. And that's why people are doing it. And secondly, it's not that Anonymous hates all this copyright stuff. It's that Anonymous has the view that if you're going to go after one person for breaking these laws, go after all of them, because Anonymous gets sick and tired of seeing news story after news story after news story every 1 or 2 months about somebody that got sued for $10 million for downloading a bunch of music, and it's just one every few months. It's like Anonymous's viewpoint on this is either shut the fuck up about it or prosecute everybody.
Well, these charges and this amount of money is equal to that of armed robbery and even murder bail charges for prison. It's absolutely insane. And as I was saying, the third group of people is the most common. It is the honest person who wants to follow the law. However, because of these restrictions and loaded up copy protection, they can't use what they paid for. So some of them turn to piracy. Others are just lost and too technologically ignorant to understand what to do, and they get frustrated.
Because that's the only people it hurts. That's the kind of people copy protection
hurts. It hurts the honest, and it makes the pirates laugh because the pirates can still do it and never have to deal with anything else.
Those of us who are going to pirate stuff, it doesn't matter how much copy protection they want to put on this stuff. It's going to get cracked. It's going to get leaked out onto the internet. And I'm tired of hearing people say that illegal music downloads are hurting the music industry. There's people that actually believe that crap.
Actually, there was several situations where artists found their content on torrent sites, and they promoted the content that was on those torrent sites. And then their sales went up. Huge sale increases when they promoted the illegal stuff instead of trying to fight it.
Exactly, because people will go illegally download a song or two or, you know, whatever, and then they'll go and buy the album.
Yeah. They want to test it. All the time. They want like some people download one song and they're like, "Okay, I like this album. I want to go out and buy it now." That's what some people do.
And that's exactly what people do. And in fact, I would argue the complete opposite of piracy hurting the music industry or any industry for that matter. I think it helps it grow, because you look at the number of people that download the stuff illegally versus the number of people that buy it legally, and I truly believe that more people download this stuff illegally than buy it legally. So if the majority are breaking the law and are pirates and everyone's still selling stuff, how is this bad at all?
Actually,
why
are
they even wasting time on this?
The thing is more than half, at least in the United States, more than half the people have or actively do something illegal in the eyes of the record industry. You're never going to catch everybody. You're never going to fix this issue. You're never going to be able to stop it. The pirates are always going to know how to get around it, and you're going to lose honest customers because you're being douchebags.
And you know what? And on top of that, I am living proof that that piracy actually encourages people to buy stuff, because I will actually admit it on the record on this show that a week after Grand Theft Auto 4 was released, I pirated that shit. I illegally downloaded Grand Theft Auto 4, played through the entire game in single player, and loved it. But I wanted the multiplayer, and I wanted the extra content, like the expansion packs that came out, and I couldn't get that illegally. So you know what I did? I went out and actually paid $50 for the game, and it was worth every penny. And I'll tell you what, had I never downloaded it and played through the single player, I wouldn't have bought it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of these cases are.
Our chat room's saying the same thing. I'm not going to name names, of course, on the podcast, but a lot of them are saying, you know, they download torrent games to try out single player without limitation. He says, if I like the game, then I pay for it and change the CD key or reinstall. If I don't like it, he wipes it from the computers and it's gone.
Yeah.
And I actually know a friend of mine does that with music. When a new album comes out that she might be interested in, instead of spending, I don't even know how much CDs or full album downloads cost. I have no idea. Because I get mine single track. But she will fire up, not LimeWire anymore, but something.
LimeWire is horrible.
Exactly. Well, it's not even around now.
It was always but horrible.
She'll download a song, you know, decide if she likes it, maybe one or two of them, and then she'll buy the whole thing. Yes, LimeWire was shut down last week completely and no longer works.
Thanks.
It's about time.
The only thing that, actually, I'm just joking around here, but I said in the past, oh crap, my malware business is going out because now no one else is going to get infected, and obviously that's not true. There's always going to be other services to get this. You're always going to have viruses and this stuff. It's not going to end. I mean, LimeWire was a big one. That was a good start. That was a good place to hit. That was a smart place to go because that was one of the largest, if not the largest place to get a lot of this crap. And to, you know, where a lot of the malware existed. Shut it down.
LimeWire's twin brother is still online.
Crossfire?
Frost.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's always going to be something else. That's the moral of the story.
It's like, I just, yeah, exactly. I don't know why they bother trying to get rid of this stuff. Anyway,
yeah, you know, one thing that probably was the big push here is there actually was a huge number of people who would go there and get child porn on LimeWire. LimeWire was, they tried to get rid of it, but it would just always exist on LimeWire.
Right.
There's a lot of child porn, along with the malware and along with the crap. So it wasn't just, oh, you could get illegal stuff. There's viruses, Trojans, worms, child porn, all kinds of crap that...
And that's the same stuff that's on torrent sites as well.
Yeah,
you go to a torrent site and you can get illegal music and you can get viruses and malware and child porn.
Yeah, you just gotta know what you're doing.
Yeah, Kevin brought up a good point in chat. Nobody used to complain about taping The Simpsons or making mixtapes back in the 80s. Holy crap, I must be like this illegal criminal because I used to make mixtapes all the time. I would listen to the radio and I have my boombox and I have my little cassette tapes and I recorded stuff. Oh yeah.
Oh,
nobody
yeah.
ever said a word about it.
You know, I remember when I used to go and rent CDs from the library. This was before I had internet service. I would copy CDs to a cassette tape.
Yeah.
To a cassette tape. Play a CD and record it to a cassette tape. It worked.
Yep.
That's what we did before the internet.
The analog hole is a beauty.
It is. It's almost gone now.
Yeah.
Alright, well, I don't want to go back to the whole Facebook thing, but we are going to briefly discuss location-based services.
No, we're not. It's your turn next, Dylan.
That's what he was getting at.
Exactly.
Oh, sorry.
I suppose,
said Facebook. I skipped, and I thought you were talking about mine.
No, I guess this kind of has to do with Facebook because of places, but more so Foursquare and Gowalla. So we're kind of going back to where we were before. But there's a recent study done that showed some pretty amazing stats here. 4% of online Americans are now using location-based services, and 1% of all internet users worldwide are using these services now on a regular basis, which I found surprising. And it goes on to list more stats. It doesn't talk too much about it here. It's mainly just stats and a little about the survey thing. But 7% of adults who go online with their mobile phone use a location-based service. 8% of online adults aged 18 to 29 are using location-based services, which is significantly higher than any other age group. 10% of online Hispanics use these services, which is significantly more than online whites being 3% and African Americans being 5%. And 6% of online men use a location service such as Foursquare or Gowalla compared to 3% of online women. So what does this all mean?
Right.
This growth that we're seeing in location-based services is very, very similar to the growth pattern of Twitter in its early days. So what does this mean? These services aren't going anywhere. Obviously, we're seeing this even more so now with Facebook updating places and putting deals in there.
Yeah, I mean these services they're obviously going to grow. It's a new thing that's just going around, and it's interesting to a lot of people. It's new. People have never viewed things in this kind of way, so it's human nature to explore it, and then a lot of people get hooked on it. And as we saw with the Facebook stuff, it can be used for business purposes.
Yeah, like and money. Yeah, I did a blog post at lockernome.com/Dylan Combs on this late last night on this exact story actually, and I said I think this is good because I mean I know a lot of people people I've talked to for example that say well we're not going to use these location based services because we don't want to publicly broadcast our location to the world or maybe not even to our friends on Facebook. Because who knows? People have been robbed. I did an article about people that got robbed when they checked in on Foursquare somewhere, and burglars noticed they weren't home. They went in and stole like $40,000 of shit from their house.
There was a story about a week ago of a woman who did a check-in. I believe it was in London, if I'm correct. And a guy, an ex that had abused her, they were in an abusive relationship several years prior, and apparently he had been stalking her online and she didn't know it, and she was regularly using check-in service, and he tracked her down and assaulted her, put her in the hospital. Just validates my, I will not use those services. They're people can laugh and scoff all they want to, but as open and transparent as I am online and have to be because of my work, I also do keep, private information is private. Nobody needs to know my address. Nobody needs to know my phone number. Nobody needs to know what the hell gas station I'm at or what club I might be going to. I don't go to clubs. I'm just saying.
Well, I was having conversation.
And that, I'll be completely blunt. Check-ins drive me completely batshit. I have unfollowed people on Twitter because they sit there and 90% of their updates is, I am at Speedway gas station. I am at Kohl's. I am at Kroger's. Yeah. I don't care.
See, that's just too much.
I just had something good to say, something I might learn, something that might make me laugh, something that might change my outlook on life, But if everything you're saying is a freaking check-in, screw it. You're unfollowed.
Then you learn that your best friend forgot to turn it off and it was like adult media. Store. It's like, oops, I forgot that was turned on. I totally did not buy adult media. And then you got those one services that record what you buy with your credit card, and it's like, oh crap, I bought a bunch of porn that day and I recorded it.
I was having a conversation with somebody about this yesterday actually, and he said that he would never use these services simply because of the privacy and security issues of not only, somebody potentially trying to go and rob your house, but maybe trying to find you and do so and, stalk you like the one woman. But I said, that doesn't matter to me. I'll still use these services. And I would, I compare events like that, just, that's no different than when everyone was talking about the Craigslist killer. The Craigslist killer story didn't get me to stop using Craigslist just because some dumbass decided to go around and kill people he met on Craigslist. Because one out of 10 billion meetups on Craigslist results in murder, and one out of 10 billion check-ins on Foursquare or Gowalla results in assault.
More random murders happen when random people find other random people to rob on the random street at a random time for no random reason. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I just thought of something. So bear with me. Help me flesh this out because I'm typing notes. Because I just thought of something I want to bring up in a blog post. I read a case a couple weeks ago and I did a story on it about a divorce case that played out very differently than it would have had Twitter and Facebook not existed, because I'm not going to go into a lot of details. The woman posted things that ended up being used against her, and since it is public domain, it was legally admissible in court. The same thing could hold true with these check-ins. Foursquare, okay, let's say there's you're suing Joe Blow because he hurt you, and Joe Blow says he has no money, but yet Joe Blow is checking into all these stores and
he bought a Mac Pro, and it's like,
exactly. Or a divorce case, I'm home taking care of my kids, I'm this great mother, but yet I'm checking into this bar and that club and this strip joint, and as Alistair Moody pointed out, the porn store.
Here's something else.
Totally see that happening.
Here's something else. Oh, we found
that is a public record of your life.
We found public information that you bought tape, a gun, and something to put someone to sleep, and you were at this location at this time.
And so now you're automatically a murder suspect.
And, okay, here's something else. There was a real world case that happened when somebody was removed as a suspect because their alibi match that what was on Facebook. Because they can match it on Facebook, they were ruled out as a murder suspect.
Good.
Yeah, so they saved their butt. So it can be good and bad. You just have to know what you're doing. You have to be intelligent. That's the whole thing here. You have to be an intelligent human being, not an idiot.
There's a lot of people that have concerns about these services. And bottom line is, if you're the kind of person that worries about people knowing where you are, if you think that you would have any problem at all with everybody in the world knowing where you're at, don't use it. It's really that simple. You have to just kind of have that attitude of, I don't give a shit if people know where I'm at and what I'm doing. That's fine.
Yep.
That's my attitude. That's why I'd use it.
Yep. It's up to the person. Well, what do you prefer and what is best for you?
I mean, my life is public anyway. I mean, it's just like when, you know, these, you know, hackers used to come in and fuck with me on my stream, and they thought they were pro because they found my address, and I was like, LOL, I don't care. And I posted it on my site.
It's called Google hacking. Anyone can do it.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I live very public. All my information is public. You can go on Google and find out my home address and send me shit. And please do. Just don't send me shit in a box.
Just send me bombs. And
yeah. Send me money and electronics. That's great. But the point is, it's out there, and I don't care that it's out there. I'm not concerned about it. But if you're not someone that has that kind of attitude, just don't use the service.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole, what's life without a little risk? I mean, what's the point in living if you're not willing to do something that could, you know,
exactly.
It's going to be fun, but could risk your anything in general. But there's a balance.
Yeah, well, there's a risk every time you get in a car, too. You could get in a head-on crash and die after you pull out of your driveway, but you're still going to get in your car, aren't you?
And you can get cancer by doing everything.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, enough of that. I'm done bitching.
Yeah. Bradley has never done bitching.
Yeah, true.
Get him going. Get him fired up about something like this. And that's what I love about both of you guys, you know, and I think that this, our show is going to go over very well every week, because we have three very different strengths. But yet we all know enough about each other's strengths that we can add to the discussion.
Oh, I can already tell that we can.
As well.
I can already tell that we're going to be able to do long ass shows. We've done three stories and we're 36 minutes
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But so it's my turn again, so.
It is.
Let's talk about Facebook one more time.
Oh, okay.
Please, please. Oh. We're going to talk about single sign-on. Single sign-on is hot. Plain and simple. I nearly applauded when Zuck started talking about it. I kid you not. Bradley, I know, is going to have a good, completely different opinion, and that's great. And I know exactly what you're already going to say. So, and I'm ready for that. So let's explain Facebook single sign-on. Number one, they are making the API completely open for this so that developers can start developing apps and adding this to their apps. Apparently, it takes a couple lines of code, 2 minutes, bam, you have single sign-on within your app. They used Groupon as their example. So what single sign-on does is you sign into your Facebook app on your phone and you're done. You click open your Groupon app, you're already signed in because Groupon has single sign-on incorporated into their app.
You don't have
to remember your passwords. You don't have to remember to log in and log out. You don't have to waste the time typing this crap over and over and over and over.
Well, the bad part I see, which is
I know
not as bad as some things that they've done, is physical security more than technical security. You have to make sure you keep up with your phone. Don't let other people use your computers. It's not as insecure as a lot of things that I hear about that do this kind of thing that help make things more convenient. And it does make things convenient. You just got to make sure that when you don't leave your devices behind and that you have a password that is strong enough to, you know, allow someone to sit there and plug at it for a while to where you can get back to the computer.
Already have this? What happened to OpenID?
No. That's a flawed system. That's horrible.
Yeah, and
don't use OpenID. It's not encrypted. It's horrible.
And I mean, with this, isn't this giving? This is, I don't know. I feel like it's putting more and more and more trust into Facebook by using their single sign-on.
Well, people already post their new pictures and drunk pictures, so their employers can see it and get kicked out of college. So that's their fault.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's like I said earlier, I'm afraid what we're going to see is a day where you're not going to be able to live without Facebook, where it's gonna be, you'll try to leave Facebook and it'll be like, oh wait, all my pictures are there, all my status updates are there, my contacts are there, my phone numbers are there, my check-ins are there, my deals are there, and all my passwords and logins for everything are there.
Which makes me glad that I haven't put anything into it.
Exactly.
And I've been able to live a normal life without it. Because there's always a service or always something that does exactly that might not be as well known,
but it
does it, and it's more secure.
LastPass.
Yeah, LastPass, that's exactly what I use.
I use it, I love it.
And you know what? The cryptology of LastPass is dual encryption. The people that host the content on their servers can't see it because it's using the encryption of your email and password. So, and it can't be intercepted. It's pure SSL, and then it's encrypted again when it comes back to you. So there is not a damn way anyone can do it or get through it or intercept the information, because everything is encrypted, and it's a no-trust, no-one platform.
I wanted to address a question in the chat room real quick. Someone said, can I trust Facebook, or can I trust these apps with my Facebook account? I would be worried about quite the opposite. I'd be worried about, can you trust Facebook with the information for these apps?
Well, here's the thing. You got to have the mindset of whatever I put on here is going to be public, rather than being the traditional conservative person who goes on the internet and thinks, well, these people have an obligation to secure my privacy. Because I set it up this way, it should work. Nope. Facebook can change it at any time. It even says in the privacy policy they have the right to legally change what they want.
Exactly. So just the things I've seen Facebook do, it just kind of turns me off from trusting them anymore, because I don't trust Facebook simply because I've seen them do things like, you know, obviously it's Facebook. They have control over what gets posted on their site. If they don't like you, you're gone. It's as simple as that. Everyone knows that. You can just get deleted simply because someone at Facebook doesn't like what you posted, and you can't do shit about it. But that's a whole different thing than that actually happening, and we've seen that actually happen. We've seen when companies, specifically a couple radio stations, posted negative comments about Facebook, and 10 minutes later their pages and accounts are just gone.
Yeah.
And I mean, think about that. Like, if I put everything into Facebook, all the contact information, everything, and I'm using single sign-on to get into like 20 different apps, and then I get frustrated and I post, Facebook sucks, and they don't like that, and then they delete me. What the fuck am I going to do?
What you put on there is no longer yours. So that's the risk that you're taking by putting stuff on Facebook. That's why you have to understand what you put on there. Make sure you have a copy, and that you have whatever you put on there backed up. Don't expect to have it exportable, because most of the crap isn't. And understand that whatever you put on there will be there for the rest of your life, and it can be seen by anybody from any computer. Keep that attitude. You will never have a problem, and you will never have an excuse to say, oh, this happened to me on Facebook. I got screwed.
Well, Kat, I know you have some more to add to this, so.
No, because we're going to backtrack at this point. It's fine.
Oh, go ahead. By all means.
Well, you know, the reason I like this so much, not that I like it, it's just I understand it, I guess you could say, where they're coming from. During the presentation, and I cannot remember the guy's name, all I know is he was the lead developer on this project for single sign-on. It boils down to, and I quote, this platform allows devs to easily build great social experiences. This creates easy sign-on capabilities, which makes users happy. Happy users are users who will log in much more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So Groupon, going back to them, because they have them there on the stage, so that's why I keep bringing them up. You know, they're going to have this cute little single sign-on button right there on their app, and you click it, and you're already signed in, and bam, you know, it's quicker, it's easier. People want that. Not everybody thinks the way we do. They think they want stuff and they want it now.
That's exactly the problem, is that 99% of users are the average end user that doesn't understand this kind of shit and doesn't understand what they might be getting themselves into and the risks that they're possibly taking with this.
Yep.
True.
And that's why I personally think, and I know this isn't the case and I know it's never going to be the case, but I think that a company should do everything they can to secure its users and property despite what the law is. It's the moral and right an ethical thing to do. It isn't going to happen, and I know legally nothing's going to be done about it.
Standing ovation for Al.
Oh, but, we all wish it would happen, but we all wish it would happen.
Right.
At the end of the day, you know what? It's business, and if the guy who's calling the shots can make an extra $2 million by screwing a couple people over, he's probably going to do it, because that's business.
Exactly. Human nature is based on greed. It's always been this way, and most people follow that. Okay. So expect the worst, otherwise you're going to be bit in the ass.
Well, before we move on from this story, because we have a lot of other cool stuff to talk about, I do want to mention for people that are going to listen later on and are wondering, this happened, what was it, Tuesday or Wednesday this past week? The updated Android app rolled out that day, which included the SDK for single sign-on. The iPhone app, however, is not going to hit devices until sometime next week, this coming week. Today is what, November 6th? It's the 6th today. Yeah, six. So sometime this coming week, you're going to see it on your iPhones as well. Most importantly to developers. Now, if you're a dev for either system, you need to note also, this is totally off the subject of single sign-on and deals both. The location API is now 100% writable. You guys can grab that SDK. You can take your little code monkey heart, you know, and get busy, and you can write some amazing new shit around the Places platform. And I think we're gonna see some really, really good stuff coming out in the very near future. The Places platform is gonna, it's just gonna explode. And I'm not a developer of any way, in any way, shape, or form, so I can't begin to tell you, but I know other people have been muttering about things that they wanna do, which I'm not gonna give away because that's their app and their thing.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot of cool stuff coming out because, like I said, it's open now. They opened it up completely, and
that's something I never thought
I'd see. It's going to be hot. Yeah, I didn't either. But
Facebook
and
open,
was,
like
in my eyes, that little tidbit that took them 2 minutes to discuss that I just brought up was probably the biggest news of the day. I really think so, anyways.
Yeah, never thought I'd see Facebook and open. Those two words don't go together.
Actually, Facebook and Apple doesn't go together more than anything.
Yeah.
Or yeah, open an Apple and not no.
Yeah, open an Apple. Anyways.
Yeah. Next story.
Bradley's gonna talk to us about security.
Alright, here's another security article. Microsoft warns of a new 0-day attack affecting Internet Explorer 6, 7, and in a way 8. And it says today, Microsoft released security advisory and a bunch of numbers to warn Internet Explorer users of a new zero-day attack that Microsoft has sent in has seen in the wild. It affects 6, 7, and although 8 has protection mode, which prevents this from working at first, you can still be socially engineered to click yes to the warning message. It can still affect you. And it says, updated security researchers at Symantec reported the attack to Microsoft and earlier today posting details. A summary, attackers figured out specific exploits for older versions of IE 6 and 7 specifically. They hacked otherwise innocent web servers and added a page with malware. They sent emails to a specific individuals within various organizations. When those individuals visited the page, the malware told them which version of IE they were using, and if it was not 6 or 7, the victim saw a blank web page. In reality, it was a nasty page with a Trojan that allowed the hacker to install commands designed disguised as GIF files, which are images. The victim needs to do nothing but visit the web page. It's your typical drive-by, nasty infection. It all goes back to the don't click crap in emails, even if it looks secure, because secure web known sources can be attacked and malware can be uploaded on their web servers.
No.
So this is where I can do my normal 2 seconds spiel, right?
I just want to throw in a comment real quick, because I don't have much to say on this. So Kat, I'm gonna let you talk about this. I just got one thing to say.
Let you finish, but
I don't even know if I can feel bad for people that are affected by this. If you're listening to this and you've been affected by this and you're running Internet Explorer 6, 7, or 8, shut the fuck up and update your browser and go download Chrome and stop using 5-year-old browser technology. That's why this is happening.
Well,
do your Windows updates, damn it.
So for more information about this, it is unlikely that the patch will be available on next week's Patch Tuesday, which is coming up next week. And it says the security team leader and all this other stuff. And it'll probably be on the next Tuesday, if not patched as soon as it can. So this looks like it's going to be kind of a long thing to fix, which is a pain in the ass, but you know, what can you do? You just have to be careful. Don't click. It goes back to the basic fundamentals of security. Don't click links or attachments in email. Treat email as a bomb. Treat it as the worst thing, and only trust the crap that you know. And if you're gonna go to links, type it in manually if you know it's a website, because otherwise it could be spoofed.
Yeah, because we all know even if you're running a good antivirus, you can't assume that your computer is secure, because antivirus is your second line of security and safe browsing is your first.
Your brain,
so.
your brain is your first line of security, and then all the other crap second. That's always the way it's been, because if you're an idiot and you do everything insecure, whether or not you got Nod 32 or the worst antivirus or the best, you're going to get bit.
All right, Kat, go.
First, I got to say, my friend Tiger is in chat. Her name is Kathy. She is the person that I learned from when I started the journey in fighting malware 7 years ago. So, as always, I have to thank the lovely and beautiful, awesome Tiger. She's one of the people that got me into this and kept me there. You know, when Al was reading that story and I kind of interrupted and said download or drive by, that's the thing that I keep trying to tell people. I hear over and over and over every single day, well, I don't download attachments. I don't watch porn. I don't do this and I don't do that. And I'm like, so? There are so many cases of drive-bys, you don't even have a clue.
Then you
can go to the most seemingly innocent website. There was a case, Tiger, I don't know. It was a few years ago, and it was huge, huge in our community trying to figure out what the hell we're supposed to do, because it was a kid's website full of games directed at young kids. So, of course, these parents are like, oh, this is great. There's educational games, and I can take my kid there, and it's safe.
Script-loaded malware.
Bingo! It was full of malware. You didn't have to click a single thing. You open up the website, bam, you were infected.
And you know what? It's even worse.
And people don't get that. Then when somebody tells me, I don't need to use an antivirus, I don't need to use a firewall, I'm safe because I don't download
Tor. Don't need to
use a and I say, bullshit.
No, software firewalls. I'm still going to hold my opinion that software firewalls are useless. And as far as that kid's
layers
game,
of protection, darling, yeah. Layers of protection.
As far as the kid's gaming website, think of it from a virus author's point of view. That is completely fucking genius.
Payload. Oh yeah.
It's called manipulation.
Absolutely payload.
There's three words that summarize this: emotion, which I hate. Social engineering, which is widely known and used by hackers. It's their primary weapon of choice. And manipulation.
Yes.
And you know what? It's always going to be that way. And here's the thing, Dylan, about the comment about firewalls. You're in consumer environments, the router is the best firewall, but you need to run Windows Firewall or one close to it to prevent infections from crossing along your network. If you have multiple computers in a home network, one gets a worm, it can easily spread because it's already past the router. It can easily spread to other machines. You have to have a software firewall to prevent this.
For those of you that cannot see our live chat room right now, which you should be in and be with us live when we're doing this every week, by the way, Tiger just said, and I quote, people are the weakest link. Period. End of quote. End of discussion.
Absolutely. People are just aren't, they're just not educated about this stuff.
Manipulation and social engineering are in a way the same thing. Social engineering is just sort of more of the recent term used for technical stuff.
All right, so moving on to our next story, Microsoft's updating the Xbox 360 interface again. I don't remember when they did the last one, but if I recall, they just did this not too long ago. But this one actually, besides just more interface updates, which I don't like, they've actually got some good stuff going on in here. Like I said, fresh interface, new fonts, new graphics, side-by-side placement of dashboard windows, improvements to the on-screen keyboard, and updated avatars. That are increasingly similar to human forms. That's definitely something we need.
Make it not so much Wii avatars.
Yeah. In addition, the update will also boast connectivity with Zune Music and Movie Marketplace. That is something we've been waiting a long time for. It might actually get me to buy a Zune Pass. Xbox Live voice chat has been improved. Improved search feature in the Netflix app. I don't even know how they can say new search feature in the Netflix app. All the Netflix apps are pretty much just the website anyway. But okay. And the new ESPN app for live streaming sports content is there as well. And the big one for gamers who wish to play a Kinect game, the update, which should be included on a disc with every Kinect title, will have to be downloaded, a process that, as Microsoft says, will take 5 to 10 minutes for Xbox 360 users connected to Xbox Live. The update is mandatory. While non-connected users will still be able to continue playing their Kinect titles without any problems. So there we go. Some Xbox updates, and they're going to improve some things, supposedly.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
And I believe last year, sometime last year, they did the first update to the interface, and now they came out with this one. So they're probably going to do this once every year, knowing Microsoft. And I did like the first update they came out with, but because I haven't had an Xbox in a while, I'm really not the one to give an opinion on this. But hey, if it's Microsoft, let's just hope they're doing something nice.
I haven't either, and I said, like, a few months ago, I said the only reason that I wouldn't buy the Xbox is everything I want except the ability to connect to Zune Marketplace.
And actually, that's the thing. They need to establish the Zune brand more, because as you know, it's a very slim market. Zune is hardly known by anyone. But the thing is if a lot of people knew about it, they would jump on Zune Pass, because it's subscription-based. Instead of paying 99 cents a song, you could buy thousands of dollars of songs a month and only pay a small monthly fee. And I believe they have some better services that allow you to watch it or listen to it streamed, as long as you can connect to the authentication servers and stuff like that. So they do, I believe, offer better ways to listen to it than iTunes and all that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And now it's like $10 a month, and you get unlimited music. And now they're actually starting to embrace the Zune brand more, like they should have from the start.
Yeah.
It's on the desktop. It's obviously on the Zune devices. It's now on, I believe it's on the Windows Phone 7 devices. Now it's going to be on the Xbox. They really need
The thing about Microsoft is they're the slow guy in the field as far as when they do massive changes and innovation. They like to watch other people do it and learn from them.
Exactly.
That's a good technique, although they have to wait longer, and sometimes it can cut their success. However, in some cases, Microsoft does a really good job of innovation, and when they learn things, they put it into action, and it ends up, you know, being positive for them, even if they did wait long, and even if they did lose some money, they in the end end up winning.
Yeah.
For most things. Of course, in Vista's case, it's true.
Yeah, that was
Windows 7, well, more than made up for that.
Vista was
so
just
Windows 8. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Oh, when, God.
I'm thinking
about
Windows
8.
Not to get off topic, but
it's too soon to talk about Windows 8.
I can't. So.
Well, anyway. Before we make Kat commit a crime, we will move on to our next story.
Breaking an NDA is not a crime. So our next story.
Well, Kat, you didn't even say anything about that one.
I really don't have anything to say because I don't game. I don't have an Xbox. I've never played an Xbox.
The Zune was my big thing. That's it.
I've never even used a Zune, so I don't really have anything to say on that one. You guys did just fine. So next up, we're going to talk about something that's bothering a lot of Android owners. But before we do, I have to mention, this was written over on TechCrunch.com, and it was written by MG Sigler, who is known as @ParisLemon on Twitter. If you're not following him, you should. He is one of the writers in this sphere that I am in online, and what I do and the writing that I do. He is one of the people that I look up to. I love the way he writes. I love the way he tells shit exactly the way he thinks it should be, whether somebody's gonna like it or not. I nearly stood up and bowed down when I read the title of this article, I admit it. So I'm gonna read the title article to you. It is called "The Verizon App Store Force Feeding Is Near. You can barf, but you'll still have to swallow it." Is that not the most epic blog post title of all time?
Oh, that's great.
Seriously, it is. But what it is he got the story from Engadget originally. And basically, there's a software update coming next week for the Droid Incredible phone, which is going to bring VCast apps along with it. And basically, it says that Verizon Wireless will begin pushing a software update to the Droid Incredible next week. This update includes software enhancements that will pre-install VCast apps on the phone.
Hmm.
Yup. Pre-installed and likely uninstallable, just like the lame apps that Verizon is already shoving down your throat. And
that's actually, yeah, that's the problem I find with Android as a whole. They allow, or whether or not they fight it or not, I don't know, but right now the handset makers add their interface on top of the operating system.
Exactly.
And now companies, the network companies and everyone is starting to put these apps already on there It's very inconsistent. This market, you buy one Android phone and you place it by another, a different one, it's completely different. There's no standard.
And I like what MG says, you know, he said, this is about choice, except when there is no choice.
Yeah, that kind of breaks the whole choice model. You need to stick with it.
Doesn't it? Exactly.
Well, there's never going to be a standard.
You know, he points out Android 2.2, the update is going to bring some really good stuff, like 720p video recording. But he says, and I quote, they come at a price. And the price is you're going to get this stuff shoved down your throat. You better make sure that you really, really want it, because you're going to be stuck with it.
And someone mentions Google said they want it this way. That way they don't... that if they start restricting things, it would discourage phone marketers and carriers.
Well, you're never stuck with it. Root the damn thing and reinstall Android.
Yeah.
That's the thing. A lot of Android people are more likely to root their devices than iPhone users, because they pick Android for the choice and the more PC-style complication.
Like choices and, you know.
So they're going to root it, and they're going people who really want this stuff removed, they're going to root it, they're going to remove it, and they're going to have, they're also going to remove whatever interface changes.
But not everybody knows how to do that, you guys. That's the problem.
Well, it's gotten more, I mean, just look at iOS, it's gotten a lot more easier, and more people have found ways to just go to a website and jailbreak your app and jailbreak your phone. If you want to jailbreak something, you Google it. It's not that hard to find out. It's not like it used to be. It used to be difficult. Now it's pretty easy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what we're gonna see here is you know, as far as this shit being installed on Android is, I mean, I expected this, and I expect it to only get worse as time goes on and more devices come out. This is going to take off, and more companies are going to install shit on there that you can't necessarily install. And it's obviously going to get worse. I mean, Android is the Windows of mobile phones, and as such, they're going to put crapware in it, just like PC manufacturers do on Windows.
Yeah, and I'm kind of interested to see how Windows Phone 7 deals with all these different problems. Are they going to be like Apple? Are they going to be like Android? Or are they going to find a happy medium that they allow a little bit of choice, but they also have standards? I'm the kind of person, I like complication, I like choice, but I also like consistency. That's why I have devices of both natures. I have an iPhone and I have Windows. It works for me.
Same here, iPhone and Windows.
I have Windows and no iPhone.
I know. You have a lame phone.
Yeah, I do.
Although he has set up his phone to do some pretty cool stuff.
I don't have my BlackBerry anymore. I destroyed it, literally.
Well, that's...
Wow.
Well, I threw it off my third floor balcony into the woods.
Yeah, well, I guess
anyway,
you're getting BlackBerries.
Anyway. I got tired of the screen turning off on it. It was a horrible device. I hate BlackBerries. I hate the way they work, and I hate the hardware, and I've had bad luck with them. I mean, the screen on this thing, I'd be sitting there typing on it, and it would just shut itself off, and the only way to get it back on was to restart the phone, and I just got tired of it. Did it like 3 times in a row, so I threw it off the balcony.
Breathe, Dylan.
It's gone. It's okay. It's gone.
Anyway.
Hey, Bradley, why don't you talk about some honeypots?
Yeah, attackers now using honeypots to trap researchers. In the security industry, a honeypot is basically something that isn't what it really is designed to be, and in the eyes of the person that sees it. And what's happening is for a long time, researchers have been going to sites they know that are malicious and going to servers they know are used for botnets and command and control servers, and they analyze it. They study it. They want to see how it works, and they want to see how widespread the infections are. They want to see how it's being implemented. They want to see just all the different kind of stuff. They're like scientists in a way for the technical community. But what the attackers are now doing is reversing that. They are designing false information, false portals for researchers. So they're really not getting the correct information. They think they are, so then they start pursuing it, and now they have the incorrect information, and now the botnet owners and all the bad guys can do what they're doing without people knowing. So it gives them an advantage.
What? Kat, you're the one to weigh in on this, not me.
Oh no, we could defer to Tiger in the chat room. She knows so much more than I do. So much more. We should have her on as a guest one of these weeks, actually.
Okay, I'm gonna read this honeypot they designed. It says, the admin interface acts as a hacker honeypot that records detailed information about who attempted to access the admin console, as well as who attempted to hack into it. into it. The fake login system conveniently accepts default or easily guessed credentials and common SQL injection strings. After the researcher slash hacker is authenticated, they are shown random exploit statistics. The last line of defense researchers said in the blog post. So basically, they're just given on purpose incorrect information to give the bad guys an advantage. So they know something and the researchers are given a lie. So now they're thrown off the train. Yep. They don't know what to do. And some of them don't even know they're being tricked. So it screws everything up. And now the bad guys can use the element of surprise, which is huge in any situation.
Exactly. Well, Tiger's right. She says, I'm surprised this hasn't been done more. That's exactly it. I remember back in the day when I first started and we had a piece of malware called CW Shredder. We had, and it was this just horrible thing. And it was, when we look back at it now, we're like, oh my God, I wish that's how bad malware was.
Yeah, malware was used to joke and prank people. Now it's,
you know, the better we get at removing it, they're cool web search. Thank you. CW Shredder was the tool. I'm tired. The better we get at removing it, they're 10 steps ahead of us. And this just proves it. They are...
Well, here's the thing. There's three different kinds of things going on here. You got the malware authors. You right. got the people who get infected and have to have it removed. And then you got the people that try and remove it. The thing is you can actively, drastically decrease your personal chances of getting infected. You can do really good at making it so your home network and your yep. stuff doesn't get screwed up. However, it is near impossible to protect others. That's right. the issue here. And the thing is researchers right now understand, because obviously they wrote this, this article came out, so they understand that they're being tricked. So now they're going to try and find ways to understand when something isn't really what it is. It'll be interesting to see how that develops.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of cool web search around. That's one that I used to clean off all the time.
Exactly, Tiger. Researchers and anti-malware folks are always playing catch-up, and that's exactly...
It's a cat-and-mouse game.
Ha, 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 ha.
No, I'm serious. It's a cat-and-mouse game.
I know. It is.
And you know, they're always going to find something new and tricky. And in a way, it's a double-edged sword. It helps people understand this stuff better, but of course, obviously gives the bad guy advantage to do what they want to do.
Well, oh well. That kind of stuff's always going to happen. It'll always be a cat-and-mouse game. Anyway. Well,
the security industry has always been cat-and-mouse games and double-edged swords. So there's always the good, the bad, the ugly. That's the way it is. And unless you really study and research this crap, you're just going to fall behind because things are changing. If you think technology changes a lot, you look at the security industry, it is the most rapidly changing branch of technology in the world because people want it to change.
Everything's changing, man. Everything's changing. I don't know if it's true. I heard... somebody told me our technological abilities and technology in general, the capabilities double every 3 years.
Well,
I think that's true.
Well, everyone's advised in business to replace all their hardware every 4 years just because of how quickly things go out of date. And there's actually a law that states the number of transistors doubles, what is it, every 18 months?
Yeah.
That just goes back to the whole rapid change. There is no standing still. There is always innovation. There's always advancements. There are always new bad things that pop up and new good things that pop up. It's always an equation that's going to remain balanced, as many things in the world are.
Well, let's end on a good note with our final story. Google Chrome gets its own PDF viewer. It already had one, but it was really, really bad. I'll read part of this article here from Mashable. Keep in mind, this is in the beta build of Chrome only, the latest beta you have to go and download from chrome.google.com. With the integrated Chrome PDF viewer now available on Chrome's beta, you can view a PDF document in Chrome without installing any additional software. They said the PDF document will load as quickly and seamlessly as a normal web page in the browser. And if that's actually true, holy crap, that's the first time that's ever been done.
And that's going to help, and that's hopefully going to help remove the whole Adobe Later issue.
Not just that, but beyond the scope of Adobe, and there was a bajillion tweets out the day that this was released. I was watching it, and I actually did a search, and everybody's like, bye-bye, Adobe. And
yeah.
Beyond that, it says, and I quote, Chrome's PDF viewer is sandbox in the same way that Chrome web pages are. This helps protect you, the end user, from the malware that is often embedded in PDFs.
First of all, I hate PDFs. I've never liked the PDF format. But if people simply refuse to abandon it and come up with something better, then I guess we'll still have to use it. And viewing PDFs in Chrome is obviously now the safest and probably fastest way to do it. And on a related note, if you're not using Chrome as your default browser, what is wrong with you?
Well, here's the thing. The two biggest browsers that I recommend are Firefox and Chrome. It kind of depends who you are. Both are really good in security. That when Chrome started implementing more security, that's when I switched to them because I wanted speed and the rapid change. But beyond that, this is going to help with the whole Adobe Reader issue. And, you know, right now I use Foxit Reader just because it's faster, and most of these exploits don't come to Fox Reader because it's not the majority of the market share. So I use the Odd Guy to prevent this, just as it's the whole Mac theory.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have much market share, no one's actively exploiting it. But it could just be just as insecure.
I can't use Firefox anymore. Ever since I started using Chrome, I can't.
Well, my problem in the past for not going to Chrome is because it wouldn't support Password Maker, and then it did, and then I went to Chrome, and then I found LastPass, and I love the way Chrome isolates every single tab into a process. That drastically improves the security. So
and reliability.
If one thing is affected, you can knock it out without any other crap going down the hole.
Exactly. When I heard that, I remember the first time, it was the day that Chrome was actually released. And I heard, so wait, if one tab freezes, you mean I don't have to close my entire browser and restart it? Oh my gosh, that's great.
That was one of the biggest advantages to Chrome other than using WebKit.
Yeah. And everyone should be using a WebKit-based browser now, especially Chrome. I think Chrome is by far the most secure browser. It's the fastest browser in my experience.
Well, I'm on their beta, route. So I get updates more quickly, and I didn't even notice the switch from 7 to 8. They're so good about it. That's another thing I love about Chrome. They update things without you even having to tell it to update it, or you even knowing. So the security is always there. It's always updating itself to fix whatever issues or to add any new features. You don't have to worry about it. That's something that would be really good for the end user, because then they don't have to remember to do anything.
Exactly. Well, I think we are running out of time. Kat, do you have anything to add to that story?
I already did. Were you not paying attention, Dylan?
Oh, I was. I just didn't know if you were to say anything else.
Tempers are
good. I'm still a Firefox user, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I
like my Firefox. I'm a dual browser girl because with my work, I do, of course, log in as myself to some sites, and I have to log into those same sites as my boss, as Al's starting to learn, as my intern.
Chilly. You know what you could do?
It gets confusing. So what I do is I stay logged in Firefox, and then I log in as him on Chrome, and it's all good.
You could start using Chromium for one of them.
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to say. I use two browsers. I use Chrome and Chromium.
See that when I first started having to do this whole login thing, I posted kitten pictures on all of Chris's websites on accident instead of my own, and called me, and he said, I didn't know that I adopted kittens. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I didn't even notice that I had done it. It took me forever. You have no idea how many places his stuff pushes out to.
Wow.
And I had to log into all of these places and delete these pictures. So I just simply use two different browsers, and that doesn't happen now.
Well, actually, see, there's a different place for every browser, whether it's a good thing or not. I understand why a lot of corporate people have to use IE, because that's just what is supported, and the IT's all iffy about it, and they don't want a bunch of changes. So, you know, even though it's a pain in the butt and it is a security problem, people who work there who aren't in charge, I can understand why they use it. It's the IT department. I kind of bust their ass when they make things and services and programs that require IE. And Firefox is still pretty good. I mean, it has some memory issues, although it has the widest range of extensions and plugins, so it's very versatile. The security is up there with Chrome, so that's not a problem. It is faster than... Actually, I can't say that it's faster than IE anymore, not with IE9 coming out.
Yeah.
I've tested IE9. It is, I would say, it's fast. Yeah, as fast as Firefox, not as fast as Chrome. It might be in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be.
And it might just change the whole perception. It's going to take some time, but it might just change the whole perception of how we see IE if Microsoft stays on the ball.
I agree.
But anyway,
we can save that for next week, actually.
Yeah. Well, guys, we are just about out of time, so let's go around and do all our shameless self promotions and everything.
Oh, we're gonna spam.
We always spam at the end of the show. Kat, since you had the first story, I will let Bradley go first. Bradley, where can we find you on the interwebs?
Well, I am actively on irc.geekshed.net, as Alistair Moody's a nickname. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/AlistairMoody. My email, my primary email right now is alistair@ipocalypse.net. And that's also where I do another podcast. It's one IRC server that I work on. And we also do a tech podcast. So if you want to listen to me over there, you can go to ipocalypse.net and look up the details.
Absolutely. Definitely go check that one out, guys. I was actually on, I think, I can't remember if it was 1 or 2 weeks ago. Could have been longer than that now. But I was on. It was a lot of fun. And that I really liked that show. So everybody definitely go and check that out. Also, Kat hosts that show every week, but I'll let her tell you about where you can find her on the internet and all her activities.
You know, if you want to find me, just come to my Twitter and stalk me. I am so busy with everything. Like I said, I don't blog enough on my own site. I do have one. I don't update Facebook. So if you want to find me, come and find me at twitter.com/KatArmstrong. That is K-A-T, not C-A-T. Kat Armstrong. A lot of people have made that mistake. Also, if you want to email me at any point in time, kat@katarmstrong.com. I live with my email inbox open on my phone, on my computer, doesn't matter. You're going to find me. Also, I wanted to mention, you know, Dylan, I'm sure you probably was planning on this, so I'll just, you know, kind of jump in anyway. We are bringing the show back on a weekly basis. This is the first time we've been back, and I don't even know how many weeks you've been off, Dylan. Quite a few.
Oh, quite a few. Yeah, I mentioned this at the beginning. We're back every
week. This show is done for you guys. We want to know what you want to hear. We want to know what you think.
Yeah.
And what direction you want us
and
to take.
And I'm sure Dylan will give an email.
Dylan will give out the email for that. Exactly. Please, you know, let us know. If you're not sure that, you know, Dylan's going to jump down your throat, send me an email and we'll talk about it.
I might. I might bitch you guys out for telling me I'm doing something wrong. No, I would never. Send us your suggestions. Tell us what you want to hear, what you like, what you don't like. What should we do? Let us know. My email address, dylan@combs.tv. You can find me not quite 24/7, but almost streaming live 24/7 at live.combs.tv. Of course, my main site at dylan.combs.tv. I am at twitter.com/dylancombstv. I'm like 300 something followers away from 20,000, so if you guys could help me with that, that'd be great. Like, because 20,000 is like a huge Twitter milestone and stuff, right?
I'm almost 1,600. I feel so incredible.
It's over 9,000.
It's over 9,000. So yeah, follow me on Twitter. Like I said, combs.tv, and of course, don't forget my tech blog at lockernome.com/DylanCombs. And we're out of time. So until next week. I'll see you on the internets.
Later, guys.